Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, I've got a cold, but Chris Tarr is here, and so is Sam Wu. And they're going to be talking about what they've been doing over the past year with some good technical ideas, plus a tribute to the late Chris Tobin, who's been gone just over a year now. That's coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. So glad you could join us. We're live on Facebooks and on Twitch.tv, and then we record the show and put it on YouTube and on Facebook so that you can see it later on if you need to. All the shows, or at least most of them from the past 12 years, are cataloged. And well, speaking of 12 years, one of my guests has been with the show for 12 years. Not every episode, but he's been here. We'll introduce that guy in just a second. Plus, we have a special guest from New Jersey, Sam Wu. He'll be coming up in just a minute. I want to remind you that our show is brought to you in part by my friends over at Radio Guide. You can get to their website at radio-guide.com. And in Radio Guide magazine, it's for us engineers, broadcast engineers, mostly radio engineering stuff, and all kinds of great articles. And they have room in Radio Guide to give you longer articles. Here's an article by Jeff Johnson called Arc Flash and Arc Fault, Poorly Understood Dangers. That's something that you ought to read. Keep you from getting electrocuted or burned from all that. It's one good article after another. Check it out at radio-guide.com. You can go to that website and subscribe to the paper version. They put out 6 issues every year. So every 2 months, you get a new issue. Just a great thing to leave running around and read from time to time. And there's a wonderful ad right there from This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks to Ray Topp for providing us a little bit of space, and mostly for providing space for these great articles that are multi-pages long, typically with diagrams and lots of information at radio-guide.com. Okay, let's bring in our guests. First of all, he's been with us for 12 years on and off, and he's back today. Chris Tarr, welcome in. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Now, the other thing about Radio Guide is, I'm sure you know this, but I'm a staff writer, so I write articles for Radio Guide all the time. So Ray's a really good guy, and he's like, you know, anytime you want to write an article, just send it to me. We're going to print it. So there you go. But yeah, it's I was just thinking about that when you said episode 576. Yeah. And I remember episode number one.
Yes, you do. You were here for the first one, weren't you?
I was. Yeah. Boy, that was, I can't believe it was that long ago.
Well, that was,
and I can't believe, I can't believe how handsome we've gotten either.
I know. We're just, it's dashing,
crazy
dashing. We should have a little spinoff podcast. We'll call it Dashing Engineers. How about that?
I don't know if we want to call it that, but I don't know. Well, I'll come up with something.
Balderdash Engineers, maybe that.
Well, at least it's not Balding Dash Engineers. We're good with that.
So, when we started, my son had not been born yet. Because he's just right. Now 11. Yeah. Oh, and you have a daughter who's what? Just a little bit older than the show, right?
14. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 14.
Oh my goodness.
And I have grandkids now. So
what? Yeah, I guess I knew that.
You did, but not, you know, I think they weren't even born last time I was on. So
there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, let's bring in our guest, a fellow who I met a couple of years ago. And, I think you've just met him now, Chris Tarr. Let's bring in Sam Wu. Sam, welcome in.
Hi, Kirk. Hi, Chris. How are you? Coming to you from my studio. Thank you for having me on.
And where is your studio?
In an undisclosed location in beautiful New Jersey. Can't tell you. Can't tell you.
Oh. Well, you know, since I am excuse me, feeling under the weather today, and my voice is going to show that, or is showing that. And so a lot of the show is going to be a conversation with you and Chris. I'm telling you, I may throw in a question every now and then, but I'm so glad. Earlier today, I was really thinking of canceling the show, and I told you guys that. And then I thought, you know what? I think I can rally for 1 hour. And so that's what we're doing. We're going to rally for 1 hour. Tell you what, let's jump in.
It was more like Kirk going, no, don't worry about me. I'll be fine. Just, you know, it's okay.
Jeez. Get me laughing. I'm going to start. Oh, man. So I'm not sure where to start. My intention is to talk about things that we've been doing engineering wise and production wise, content creation wise for the last year, and how us as engineers, and Sam is also a content creator himself. Sam, tell you what, before we have to roll into our first spot break, Sam, why don't you tell the story of how you and I met with Chris? It was Chris Tobin who introduced us.
Chris Tobin.
And the event and technical circumstances under which we met at a bar, and it was crazy.
Yeah. Kirk, I started a podcast probably in 2017, kind of a guinea pig podcast, I'd like to say, called the Let's Go Devils podcast for a variety of reasons. Number one, the team was doing bad, and I would go on Facebook Live and just let the team have it, why they were losing all the time. They're still losing, by the way, although they did win last night. And, you know, one thing led to another, and Chris and I were, you know, Chris Tobin and I were working together on several other projects beforehand, but when you and I met there, we were trying to do something that Chris always wanted to do back when he was working with, CBS Radio at the time or whatever. And was the live event format and doing live simulcasting on location. And that's where you met, and we had a lot of technical challenges at a place then called PJ Ryan's, now called Taj Lounge 973, where in that particular street in Newark is considered a historical district. So when they built the Prudential Center where the New Jersey Devils play, they put the fiber across the street, but because it was a historical district, they couldn't even touch it. Newark, New Jersey has all sorts of rules. So the best internet service they have is old copper service, the DSL. I think the best they can do is 2 down and maybe 768 up.
Oh, and not even a mega. That's, wow.
You can't even run a credit card machine, the POS. System. So Chris and I spent almost about 5 years, Chris Tobin and I, trying to figure out how to bring internet in. And then what we also found out was the cellular networks were all screwed up. Anytime you have about 16,000 people that were to go to the venue, the Prudential Center, for a game, everything would get throttled. So you could go there and do a tech check the night before. The environment changes on game day. And basically, you have nothing down and nothing up. And sometimes the cell towers, and one of the games we used to play is, when will the cell tower change hands and reset at a certain time? And we literally pinpointed to the exact minute when the internet was shut off on us during a live stream. So there were a lot of technical challenges there. And also, when you have about 100, 200 people watching your live video podcast and also streaming it in multiple distribution points, there were just so many different moving parts, so to speak. And one of the things that Chris Tobin always taught me was keep it simple. But I'm not a simple person. But he always said, keep it simple, keep it simple, keep it simple. And it took a few years to put this all together. And this is all done before the pandemic. Like, I think Chris Tobin was ahead of his time with some of the thoughts he had about, you know, bringing, if you don't have the metrics in the content business, if you don't have the metrics, meaning ratings or numbers, you go where the numbers are. And that's the biggest challenge, because sometimes that environment is not exactly the greatest.
So these podcasts, so I wish I had some video. I should have arranged to send some over to Suncast to show. But these podcasts occur in a bar upstairs across the street from the Prudential Center where the Devil Rays.
Devils.
New Jersey Devil
Devils.
Rays.
Right. Devils.
Devils. Sorry. Devils. Sorry. Yep. Play. And it's a raucous environment. It's absolutely raucous environment. And you're doing a not just a podcast, but you're doing a video podcast, a video stream, right? You've got what like a radio remote. You got a table. You got people with headsets like you're wearing now. And you're doing this live broadcast. You bring guests in, and it's a crazy, wonderful environment. But you got to get this stream out of there. Now, you produce it right there on site, or is somebody switching the video elsewhere?
It could be done both ways. It could, mm-hmm. You know, you could have somebody professional like Suncast do it remotely from his own studio, or mm-hmm. you could do it on site. It doesn't really matter at this point. The two things that I found in the workflow you must have. Without it, you have nothing. Power and internet. Those are the two things you need to have. That's the infrastructure you need to have. Because you can have all the best equipment in the world. You could have $10,000, $20,000 worth of equipment, and you can have a five-person crew doing it. But if you don't have power or you don't have internet, you have nothing. you really don't. And those two challenges, because we learned a lot, pretty much, you know, and you could go back to your episode hacking the LTE. That's Chris and I did a lot of stuff together and shared notes on that. So that's and like you said, the environment changes at each podcast or live video podcast. And there were times where we were actually simulcasting on AM/FM and satellite radio in some years on top of everything else. Because, you know, I always felt that, you know, when you want to create content and you need those numbers, you need as much distribution points as possible. Reason why, you never want to make anybody feel alienated. You want to make it easily available to the end user, meaning your audience, to consume your content, and that's how you build numbers. And I liken social media, because this is what you guys do. I mean, actually, it was kind of Chris used this week in Radio Tech, and he glowed about Andrew Suncast and GFQ Network, what you guys do. He showed me the samples that you guys have done, and it's just amazing. And it's just, you know, and doing the multi-point distribution. I liken social media, because there's so many different social media venues out there, like Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube Live, that it's kind of like bar hopping. You want to be at each bar, and you kind of hop along during a live broadcast and start answering questions, because people that can then participate in your live video podcast, especially on location, ask the guest questions, make some comments. It gives the broadcaster, like myself, if I'm running out of things to say, I just go to Facebook Live and cheat and hope that people are asking questions, and I can just drag out, you know, dead air into a 10-minute conversation with the audience. And they're your online extension of your content. So that was kind of the premise of what we were doing and what you saw at the bar with the ruckus going on.
You mentioned that to do a live broadcast like this, you need two things, power and internet. And I think a lot of our audience knows about the internet solution that you use, but I'm going to hold that for just a minute. Chris Tarr, the group that you're engineering for now, that you're in charge of engineering, do you guys do much in the way of live remote broadcasts or video remotes? Or was that more with your previous? Oh, you do? Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, for those of you who have been catching up, I've landed my dream job about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now, as director, group director of engineering for a company called Magnum Communications or Magnum Media. It's a locally owned Wisconsin group. We've got close to 50 signals. So I'm in charge of all of them. as well as the different locations and all of the tower sites, and that sort of thing. And really, it's interesting you should mention that, because one of the reasons I was brought in was to kind of modernize that sort of thing. I mean, this was really, it started out, it's a family group owned by a gentleman named Dave, great guy, started it from scratch probably 20 years ago with one construction permit, and has grown it ever since. And over the years, he's been using contract engineers in different markets and various places to kind of manage things. Well, it's gotten to the point now that there are so many locations and signals that that wasn't working, that patchwork of contract engineers. So he and I have known each other for years and was, you know, trying to hire me for a long time. Finally, the timing was right, and I joined him. But, you know, one of the things that I had to do was take a look at, like, they were still using flip jacks, cell jacks, things like that for sports events. You know, they weren't really utilizing much video. You know, some of their transmitter sites, well, one of them especially, you know, was using a really poor quality connection because they thought they couldn't get internet out there. Turns out one of the sponsors today is somebody I turned to for that solution. So, you know, that was really, and as Sam put it, if you got to have internet now. And so, you know, I've been working on getting, you know, wireless hotspots for our staff. We're all working remote now, and I don't think that's going to change. So, you know, I've been having to work with those sorts of solutions too. But for example, I just turned everybody on to Lucy, and we've been implementing that for sporting events. And that has been, I mean, a night and day change from using a cell phone with a cell jack to going to Lucy and being able to actually, you know, play commercials from there. You know, I've come up with a kind of a standard kit with a standard mixer and headsets and everything that's really easy for these guys to set up and use. So that's been, you know, that kind of connectivity has become important. Not only that, but I've now put together all of our facilities on one VPN network so that, you know, anybody can, with the right credentials, can connect in and access to all of our assets that we have available that they would need to get to. So, but again, that requires connectivity and security and things like that. So that, you know, yeah, I've been doing a lot of that sort of thing aside from building other things, which you can talk about later. But internet and connectivity has really been at the top of my list, not only because it's something that we really need to have and do right, but I've got so many locations and people all over the state that there's always a little bit of a difference depending on where I go and who the providers are and what's available. So, you know, there's been, you know, it's one thing if you're going to one place every day and you can say, okay, I want to, you know, install decent connectivity at that one place, which I've done. But then we've got, you know, sporting events and things like that where it's going to be a high school gym somewhere. And, you know, we have to maybe not rely on the school Wi-Fi to make that happen. So, you know, there's a lot more legwork going into it now because unlike when I was with Intercom and CBS, you know, we're small town. We're not small town. We're you know, we have the kind of a full service kind of thing with a lot of our stations. We still do local news, some stations hourly. We still do high school sports. So, you know, it's kind of that hometown radio thing. And but again, when you're in the middle of Sparta, Wisconsin, you know, population of a couple thousand, you don't know what you're going to get for internet, but it's good. It's going to be something really important for us to have.
I should clarify something that Chris said. He said he turned everybody on to Lucy, and that means a little
in my location.
So it's if you go to the website luci.eu, and I'll put a link in the show notes. That's some software that lets you do live broadcasting from your phone, and it's pretty flexible. There are other, you know, competitors to that as well. I became familiar with Lucy software because it works with the Telos Zip 1.
That's one of the reasons we use it.
Yeah, you can also use it with Lucy server software at the radio station. But it also worked with something a lot like a Zip 1. Okay, cool. I want to hear more about some of that, Chris. I'm going to follow up. And Sam, stand by. We're going to get to understand your exact solution of getting internet where there wasn't any meaningful internet. And the problem being, or one of the problems being, tens of thousands of people across the street all on their cell phones doing Facebook updates. We're going to hear about that in just a minute. It's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 576. last one of 2021. Sam Wu and Chris Tarr are my guests, and we'll be right back right after this from Broadcast Bionics.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. Designed to bring video to your audio content. Visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
Thanks so much to Broadcast Bionics for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. You'll find not only the Camera One system, but plenty of other solutions to help out your social media efforts with your radio station. You can really make a splash on social media, get people talking about your radio station by using just some of the cool software and hardware that goes along with it from Broadcast Bionics at bionic.radio. There's a link in the show notes for that. All right, it's Kirk Harnack, and This Week in Radio Tech. I'm pretty well under the weather here. Excuse me. And Chris Tarr is here. He's back after a bit of a hiatus. We'll be talking about Chris's participation in the show going forward. And Sam Wu is here also. We ought to return to that topic that Sam was talking about, that is doing this big remote broadcast, live remote audio and video. And they were streaming this out of a bar across the street from the New Jersey Devils and their hockey game. So, Sam, I stopped you before you got to the exact technical solution, at least the one that I saw when I was there, and I was really impressed by what you guys were doing. Remember, nothing but DSL and really bad DSL in a stadium across the street with thousands of fans getting ready to watch a hockey game. So, Sam, what can you add to that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I should be plugging or not. I think I am, but yeah, so Chris introduced me to a gentleman. His name is Josh Bone. I think everybody knows his name on this fine program. And what I really needed was a reliable solution. Anything that I was using was useless in that environment. Remember, the internet, the broadband, the LTE service in that area at the time would just throttle, and it'd be unpredictable. But if you did it enough times, you would literally know that at 5:58 p.m., AT&T Wireless would go down till 6:03, and then Verizon had their own time around that time period. And then when it came back up, there was nothing left because suddenly it just doesn't work. And the MaxConnect solution was introduced to me, and I think, well, you know what? I was desperate. And I begged to have this service, and by the time it got to my hands, I went to Penn State University and tailgated. I got it in the mail. I said, I'm going to take it there. And this is a funny story. So I get there, tailgating with 106,000 people, thinking, okay, I'm going to use this internet. It's going to work, blah, blah, blah. And not default to Max Connect. It didn't work because I was using Verizon, because that's what I was using at the time. And fast forward 2 hours later, I was so bummed in the stadium. And during halftime, I realized, and I should have known because that's where I graduated from, that's AT&T country, because AT&T sponsors everything of Penn State. And I was like, Allah. And then, but I didn't have the AT&T service at the time with Max Connect. But anyway, long story short, when I started using it, I started to realize it was a lot different from what I'm used to with either business or consumer broadband. And what I found is it is so smooth and steady and consistent that it has bailed me out in a lot of situations. A lot of situations where the environment's harsh. And when you and I met 2 or 3 years ago, I was just an amateur. Like, I just had started to learn how to really use it to my advantage, learning how to ping the towers, not to go too hard, and, you know, just to kind of finesse it in. And it's really an art form of how you do that kind of stuff.
So what you describe is what I've experienced too. I think a lot of us have. We might go to a site and using our cell phone or using an LTE hotspot, like a MiFi type of device, right? We'll do a test and we'll get, hey, I've got 15 megs down and 7 megs up. This was some typical numbers I would get on 4G LTE networks a few years ago. And we think, hey, we can do a broadcast. In fact, I did one in Las Vegas at the SBE annual meeting, and we tested it beforehand. We were getting good numbers up and down. In fact, we were getting ready to do this with Suncast. And we tried to stream video. And even though the numbers, the bandwidth numbers looked good, we were still getting dropouts, consistent, regular dropouts that a speed test maybe just doesn't tell you about. I don't know, it was some number of drop packets. Well, I did have with me, and we'll do an ad for it later on. I did have with me the Max Connect wireless service from Josh Bone. And I, frankly, I was just too lazy. I was easily just using my cell phone as a hotspot. But I thought, well, I guess we need to break out, you know, the Max Connect box, which is a 4G LTE modem, but it's on its own separate APN. Maybe you or Chris Tarr could explain what that means a bit better, but it's on a separate virtual network from everybody else, right? And so you get a slice of bandwidth that's sliced away. It's reserved for you. Now, I was only getting 5 megs up and 5 megs down. So I was getting less bandwidth, but it seemed like every packet was getting through. This was about 3 years ago. Suncast was getting a perfect picture from us, from the Las Vegas Convention Center. And so that's the same experience I've had with a service like Max Connect, that, you know, the packets go through because it's a different tier of service. Speed isn't the thing, but reliable packets and no contention with others. You're not contending with all those other people using their cell phones. You get a slice and it's yours and it's cut out for you. Does that describe technically, Sam, what you guys experienced when you used Max Connect?
Absolutely. Like I said, it's smooth. I think I put more emphasis on the jitter with the internet. Speed, again, I kind of liken it to, if I'm going to make it an automobile analogy, horsepower versus torque. And depending upon what situation you're using. So if you're buying a vehicle and you're looking for top end speed and all that, okay, you know, torque is good, but you want the horsepower. But if you're looking for towing and you're looking to tow 20,000, 30,000 pounds with your pickup truck, I'm just making up numbers. You know, you want to put an emphasis in torque. And when I deal with live streaming, everybody, it just annoys me to this day, because the knowledge that, you know, Chris knows and I know, everybody's talking about top end speed. But really, when you're talking about this feed, I just need 3 meg up and down to be consistent. You don't even need that much. You can always play it around. with your codec, but I just needed to be consistent. I don't want anything to drop out, and I just want that peace of mind with the Max Connect that it will not drop out. Like during the pandemic, when I was doing some contract work, for example, when there was a lot of civil unrest going on in the country, and a lot of CEOs were trying to do these virtual town halls, they basically told me, "This better not go down. This better not go down because it's such a sensitive subject that I'm doing live." And I would have to make guarantees. And we all know that there's no guarantees in life. Even, you know, anything can happen. A meteorite can hit us and, you know, sorry, it's, you know, act of God, but people don't care. And with that Max Connect, it gives me an extra tool that I can rely on, but also it minimizes the stress of any broadcast engineer that you've got this in your back pocket that, hey, you know what? I can throw the Max Connect on it. It's not 100%. You got to know how to use it, but it does work. It does work in those situations in a pinch.
Chris has got something to tell us in a second here, but I just got a message from Tim Braddock. He's one of our faithful viewers, listeners, and he said something funny here. He said, if you've survived a Devils game without wearing beer home, it was a bad game. Is that right?
What did he say?
He said, sorry. If you survived a Devils game without wearing beer home, it was a bad game. So a good game, you're going to wear beer home.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty much. Okay. Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't get.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he expressed it as a double negative, but yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. I mean, usually it's a good time. What it means is if the Devils are scoring, your beers are flying. And yes. Right now they're $14 per beer right now at the Prudential Center, the highest in the league. So, hey, that's why they got to keep on scoring, keep the revenue flowing in. But anyway, yeah, he is right about that.
All right. Let's talk to Chris Tarr for a second. Chris, you've never worn beer home from a Packers game, have you? You're muted or something's off.
There we go. I've worn beer. Not beer, cheese and brats home, but never beer.
I didn't intend for this to be a commercial for Max Connect, but we are talking about the technologies that have helped us get through these few months. Chris, sure. What use have you found for this kind of wireless
tech? It was pretty interesting and also again I don't think it's an ad in as much it's such a valuable tool for people who are doing this, and Josh has come up with such a unique product that, you know, who else, there's really nowhere else you can go right now to do this. But Sam really hit it on the head. You know, we don't need speed, we need consistency. And I have a site that is literally in the middle of nowhere, you know, in a pasture up in Door County, Wisconsin, and the studio is in Green Bay. Well, we were using, Zip Ones for our STL, and we were doing that over a wireless internet provider who went out of business. So we were stuck, or going to be stuck, with no internet at all. I was scrambling to try to come up with, you know, multiple hop STL and all these other things. And then I remembered that Josh had this Max Connect product. So I did a little research to find out who the best provider was in the area. It turned out to be AT&T. I had picked one of these up, got their package on there, put it out at the site. And again, you know, when I mean middle of nowhere, I mean, it is like, you know, I'm surprised you get cell service at all out there. I mean, this is really in the middle of nowhere. And sure enough, it connected right up, got me a signal. And within, you know, half an hour of putting it in, I had our radio station on the air using the Zip Ones over the Max Connect. And what surprised me is that there are very little, it's running 24/7. And there are very few outages or anything like that with that. We haven't had a major outage at all since we've put it in. I mean, there's an occasional, you know, if they do something on the cell tower or something like that. But, you know, I haven't gotten any alarms or anything And again, you know, no major failures at all. And so it's just been running 24/7 as our data connection for STL. And again, you know, it doesn't take much data. We're not running a whole lot of audio out there. It's a, you know, AZ codec, you know, we're lucky if we're running at 128 most of the time, and it works great. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those products where, you know, I'm always hesitant to put my eggs in that basket. You know, it's like, well, cellular, what good, you know, but you know, Josh has really worked out a good deal with these guys with this APN, which gives us priority access on the tower, and we get a static IP address and all of these other things. So it really solved a lot of problems for us, in that, you know, this would have been a very hard link to engineer. And when we had the wireless internet out there, it was great. It was, you know, we didn't give it a second thought because we had, you know, that's all we needed was network connectivity. But when that went away, we were really going to be stuck. And so, you know, this was a great solution. And, you know, we're starting to look at those for backups at some of our sites for audio backups and things like that. So it's a handy device for sure.
Speaking of handy devices, that's a great segue. Thank you, Chris Tarr. Handy devices from Angry Audio, one of our sponsors. AngryAudio.com is the website. And I've got a couple handy devices right here. If you're building studios or maybe refurbishing some studios, so often we need one of these devices that goes from RCA connectors, you know, minus 10 audio level, unbalanced, into some professional gear, which doesn't always want to talk to an unbalanced device. Well, this is the IHF to Pro audio interface from Studio Hub. Studio Hub now wholly owned by Angry Audio. Well, there's audio going into this thing from, say, a CD player, cassette deck, maybe. What's coming out, though, or maybe you've got a Barracks a decoder and you need to get that to +4 balanced. Well, right here is that output. This is +4 professional levels balanced on this RJ45 connector, and power goes in right here from the Studio Hub 15-volt power system. This, it's all right here. It's super quality audio. It's the really nice little box. Easily, you know, you can put some double-sided sticky tape on there, some sticky foam, and tape that up inside, or you can screw it down. Wonderful little box. And they do other similar boxes here, like this one. This is for converting analog audio, IHF level, that's the minus 10 consumer levels, into digital audio, AES digital. So you can also go balanced stereo in if you've got a balanced device, but you need AES 3. You come out right here as a digital AES output. And it's also powered right here by an RJ45. Again, the Studio Hub standard. And if you need headphones, well, we have the Studio Hub headphone amplifier right here. This is in the Decora format. So you can go down to Lowe's or Home Depot or your Ace Hardware store and get boxes that'll hold these just fine. You can get plates that'll go over them just fine, metal, plastic, any color you want. They put two of them side by side if you like, put a whole bunch of them in, whatever, you know, Decora kind of stuff has, you can do it. And you've got the same RJ45 connectors in the Studio Hub standard for audio in and also looping through audio out. Why would you loop it through? Well, let's say you've got several headphone jacks to install in a studio. You can just daisy chain them one after another. I think the power supply will run 4 of these around your studio. So you can have 4 running off one power supply. Wiring is quick and convenient. You can literally have them wired up in minutes, just a few minutes. Great box there, great little headphone amp. And the rest of the Studio Hub standard, of course, you've got the adapter cables like these. So you can go from some analog device with analog output on XLR into the Studio Hub format. Then you just take a Cat 5 cable of whatever length you want. It's balanced audio at that point. You can go a long ways and not pick up any hum, buzz, or any noise, and go into your digital device, whether it's a Studio Hub audio console or whether it's something like an X-Node or a Wheatstone Blade or something like that. You can run that in there. It makes your wiring so easy, so easy. I used to wire these for AES digital audio, and I would just, let's see, it's the green one that is for AES digital, because that just needs one pair. Well, they also make this in just the one pair. This one here happens to be an output, so you can come out of the AES digital output of an X-Node and go into some AES digital input. Let's say an audio processor that has an AES input. You would use that. And they have these in both these, the style that has a female RJ45, so you'd plug a Cat 5 cable into that. Or they have these in, you know, several different lengths. This one's a 6-footer right here. So you go a 6 footer from the analog output of some audio device into the RJ45 there, and that's about 6 feet worth of cable. Lots of convenient and pretty ways to wire up your studio accurately and all with high quality and all gold-plated contacts, because that's the RJ45 standard. Check it out from angryaudio.com. Go to the website, angryaudio.com. You'll also read about the headphone disconnector, the Bluetooth audio gadget, and so many more cool things from Angry Audio. All right. Hey, we've been talking about Max Connect Wireless. And tell you what, I think we've got a little quick video clip here about Max Connect. We'll be right back after this testimonial.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
Here's what John Tokok is talking about. This is a Max Connect wireless 4G LTE modem. This one happens to be a Cradle Point one, but there's others as well. And it's not the modem that makes the difference. It is the SIM card that's inside. In this case, it's a SIM card for Max Connect Wireless. There's a link in the show notes, or you can go to Max Connect. I know it's spelled funny. There it is right there on your screen. Max, MAXXKONNECT.com. Check that out. Josh Bone has done a terrific service for the broadcast industry in inventing this great way for people to connect. And that's one thing we've been talking about here. All right. It's time to get back into our show with Sam Wu and with Chris Tarr. Chris, I wonder if you could, you've done so many projects this year. I'm sure you've got a mental list of a bunch of them. Maybe you've got something that you'd like to show us or talk about for the next few minutes. And after that, I'm going to ask Sam to talk about this interesting project that he and Chris Tobin had been working on before Chris passed away. Sam is taking that project on himself and moved it forward. But Chris Tarr, what would you like to fill us in on?
Oh boy, where do I start? So again, I mentioned earlier how there wasn't really one engineer for the group overseeing everything. So everything was kind of a patchwork of contract engineers. And oh, by the way, about 3 or 4 months after I got hired in the middle of pandemic, we bought like 6 radio stations. So I had all this stuff going on, but it requires a lot of changes and a lot of upgrades and a lot of rewiring. So I took I have a couple of pictures. I could have hundreds of them and we'll save that for another show, but I picked out 4 pictures of some of the things I've been running into. So we'll start with the first one, which is tower site. And what that is we had an AM tower site that was overgrown with just trees and bushes and everything else. And as you can see, we found some things in the homeless camp. It's just, you know, again, it's amazing the kind of things you see. It was this completely overgrown AM tower site. And I said, well, we're going to completely cut all the foliage out. You know, it's just good engineering practice, but those are some of the things we found. And I actually had one of the police officers come by and I gave him that stuff to get rid of it for us. And he said, yeah, you know, we really appreciate you cutting down the trees and doing the trimming because we've had homeless encampments here and we've had some crime issues. And he said, now that it's cleared out, they're not going to come back here. So that was, you know, that was just one of those really interesting things I'd never run into before.
Wow.
It was, you know, and it's sad. It really is. It speaks a lot for, you know, the world we live in, but, you know, it was just amazing how, you know, this site had been neglected for so long that, you know, it was just, I remember when they were taking me on the tour and the contract engineer said, oh yeah, I just had to replace this lock because, you know, somebody had broken in and they were living in the building. And I said, you know, I think there are other things we can do to prevent this. You know, if they can hide, they can take all the time in the world to get into the building. So, you know, I didn't want to make a compound or anything. I mean, that nobody really wants to do that. So I said, well, we just got to get rid of all these trees. So we came out with a bunch of equipment and just cleared the whole thing out. And we haven't had a problem since then. Another interesting project I have been working on or had worked on, and if you want to bring that up, that's one that says Hoka. We bought a group of stations in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and the issue there was we were grandfathered in. We already had a couple of stations in the market, so we couldn't buy the entire group of radio stations that was for sale. However, translators don't count against the market cap. So we did this kind of a multiple deal with a couple of groups. We picked up, I think, three of the full power stations and picked up two translators. So we engineered the translators because of the terrain and everything. They are almost have the same coverage as a Class A. This is a rack that I was working on. I obviously, you could see by the wiring, it wasn't finished, but that's two radio stations. But what I wanted to point out was all of the Kirk Harnack gear that's in there. The Zip One, the Omnia 5, and the Cutting Edge Unity. That was an interesting one because we had to, we took the stations over at midnight, and all these changes and spinoffs took place right at midnight. So at midnight, we had two stations that went to other owners, and then I had two translators that had to be put on with the formats of the stations that were moving. So all at once, I had to reroute all of this audio, and we have Axios. It was pretty easy to do, but it was one of those really weird, probably never happened in that market again, where like four radio stations that night in the middle of the night changed formats. But I had built this in advance to make all this happen and get them all on the air. So that is one picture. Then we've got one that's labeled before, and this is at our Fort Atkinson facility. Where again, it was a facility we had bought, and we buy and run these stations in smaller towns, and they come with some smaller station issues. This being one of them. This was a rack that was down in the basement that had the STL gear, the processors, and things like that. And as you can see, it was a little messy. So I went in and tore that all apart. And then we've got the after picture of what happened after we got it all taken care of. So,
nice.
So those are kind of, you can see there's the Axia node down there at the bottom. It's interesting because we have upgraded all of our sites to at least have X nodes for the backbones. And now we're building some out with the actual surfaces. But the people in the group had never, they've heard of Axia, but they never saw it in use. And as I started to roll out these new stations that we bought, I started there with Axia right away. And as soon as they saw the flexibility there, they were sold. I've been putting them in all of our buildings. In fact, I've been waiting because they've been backordered. It kind of goes back to, the interesting part in all of this where, you hear a lot of times, small stations getting knocked because, owners don't want to spend the money or, that sort of thing. And the reality of it is I've found, especially, in the people that I work with, they do want to spend the money. They just want to know that it's worthwhile money and that there's a good return on investment and it's something that helps them out. And when I've been doing these upgrades, one of the other things I've done recently was replaced all of the streaming computers. And I found one model of a small form factor PC with a certain load of software that's exceptionally stable. So I bought 20 some of those and deployed them everywhere. And that is again, there was some expense there, but now we have streams that never go down. So, I found that, these owners and the gentleman I work with more than willing to spend the money for that kind of reliability. But there wasn't a lot of people that were that experienced that could, follow through and explain that to him. So, as I looked at and said, well, these distribution amplifiers are nice and everything else, and these old switchers, let's see what we can do with an Axia node. And I put that in and it was night and day. All of the noise from the analog switchers were gone. We put Axia drivers on the playout machines. And he's like, they just sound like, I put in Omni 11s in some of our locations. It's like, these just sound like brand new radio stations. I can't get over it. and it's money well spent. And that goes for, again, clearing out transmitter sites and things like that. So that's why this has been a lot of fun for me, because, you know, I first of all, the buck stops with me. So the entire, I'm a vice president of the company. So, you know, I'm in charge of that sort of thing. So I get a lot of leeway into making those decisions on how I want things. I just have to come up with a way to explain and have my my employer understand what I where I'm going with this. And we've known each other for so long that we've built up some trust for that. But he sees the results. You know, he sees, you know, when he built out these translators and I, you know, buy high end, you know, Shively antennas or, you know, stuff like that, get a good tower crew out and, you know, buy new transmitters. The performance that we're getting out of these is so amazing. And again, it doesn't cost a lot more to do it. It's just how you spend your money. And so that's been fun. And it's just been a nonstop doing projects like this for a year and a half now. And he and I were laughing because I think we're putting our last new translator in first quarter. And when that's done, that's it for now. And, you know, we've put on, I think, 5 or 6 or 7 of them this year. And he's like, we're going to sit back and be bored. And I said, well, I hope to be bored for a little bit. But then we've got, you know, it's kind of like painting the Brooklyn Bridge. You can start working on one station and get all the way to the last one and have to start over again with the next set of stuff for the stations. So, you know, it'd be nice to get it a little more of a routine. But it's been a lot of fun, you know, doing some of these projects. And it's certainly been, you know, a learning experience for me. And it's been a little different working from home now. I don't have an office anywhere. I don't need one. So that's been a little different. But I'll tell you, I get to do so many fun things and get to go out in the field. I still get to go out and play with transmitters. You know, I do have an amazing staff of engineers that just do fantastic work. So, you know, I get to learn from them and I get to lead this team and do some things that I've always wanted to do. So it's been a lot of fun.
So you mentioned something that really piqued my interest, but you may have skipped over on purpose. The computer with the cut of, I assume, operating system software that seems really stable. Can you reveal anything about that?
Well, it's not anything exotic. It's just especially a load of Windows 10 that I have configured and removed a lot of stuff in. And we use it's not Wide Orbit anymore. Odyssey bought them, but Wide Orbit Streaming. And I have I buy licenses for Hanse's software, Stereo Tool.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
As well as some other auxiliary things. Plus, it all runs on Axia for drivers. So, you know, basically, there's no sound cards in these things. It just comes in off the Axia network, runs through Stereo Tool and the virtual audio cable, and then comes out into the encoder. But with the stable software, you know, they just never shut off. And with Hanse's software, they sound so good. I mean, it just, the audio quality is fantastic on them. So that alone, I mean, we had a mix of Windows XP machines and different outboard processors like, you know, Behringer boxes and things like that. So even just that one thing made such a huge difference for our group, because we have an app that has, you know, all of our stations listed, and you'd hit one and you didn't know what you're going to get. You know, was the stream going to be up? Was it the audio going to sound okay? Was it going to have any processing on it? You know, some of the stations were taking feeds off of tuners, you know, that sort of thing. So a lot of that is just kind of going through and taking a look at, you know, what's the best way to do this, and then doing that globally for all of the stations. And I've been given a lot of leeway to do that, because you know, that's, you know, the most important thing with all of this is being able to show those results. So, you know, I did one cluster I did with the new software, and he heard it and was like, oh yeah, that is amazing. Let's do it. And so I went and I did it everywhere else. You know, same thing with, you know, Omni 11s and, you know, all these other things where it's not the cheapest thing in the world to do, but after I show him the results, it's like, well, yeah, that's, you know, we're in the business of, you know, connecting clients and listeners and advertisers. And, you know, if we've got something that sounds this good, I mean, that's a home run. So it also helps that he's very engineering oriented. He's a real, he's a radio guy. And, you know, he and I have a lot in common. We both started in radio on the air in high school. And, you know, we just went different paths. I went into engineering, he went into ownership. But he really appreciates good engineering. So as I show him these things and we, you know, we do all these things with ubiquity links and codecs and things like that, he loves it. He just is like, it's a lot of fun for him. So that helps a lot.
Yeah. And I'm not to beat a dead horse, but on that Windows thing, sometimes you can buy, and I'm not sure you're supposed to be able to buy, but sometimes you can buy the Windows 10 Enterprise LTS, long-term support version. Right. And that comes without all the bloatware in it. And I've used that when I could buy it. And again, I'm buying it off people on eBay. I've had good luck so far. They've all installed, the licenses have all worked so far. But you know, that's, to me, that's something that, and you can absolutely turn off updates on that. Just update them when you're ready to. But that's something.
Yeah, and you can get the LTS if you're a business. You can get the business license for it. And there are hacks out there to do some of those same things, which is kind of what I do. You know, we spend some time with it. In the markets where I don't have a Zip 1 for Lucy, I put Lucy servers on them, the server software. So, you know, it's just been you take the time to kind of figure it out and learn it. And, you know, reliability, again, just across the company, reliability is important. And, you know, we went from, we use Symian for Playout. And, you know, we had gone from, you know, at least once a week, some station being silent or off the air for a couple hours to, you know, we count it now in minutes a month for 30, 40 stations. But it just kind of took me looking at each situation and going, okay, you know, I know in this market, these machines run really, really well. What are we doing there? And let's do that everywhere else. These streaming boxes are really old. Let's find one standard that we can buy bulk software for and deploy them everywhere. So now when we bought those stations, the six or seven stations over the summer, we could come in with our stuff and just go, okay, here are the streaming boxes. Here are the automation Playout boxes. You know, we're already configured and we just plug them in and go. But, you know, it's a standard rollout now, as opposed to, okay, what is the local engineer going to find to put in there? And is it going to be similar? Can we make it work? Just even those simple things made a whole lot of difference in the reliability and operation of the group.
Chris, don't go away. I'm going to come back with you right after our next spot break. Sam, in our just a couple of minutes, tell us about this iPad project that you and Chris Tobin had been working on. What is it? How does it further your business? And what does it do for the people who use it?
Well, about 10 years ago when I met Chris, I was looking for an IP solution. He was working with CCS at the time, and I told him that I wasn't really happy where things were going because I was still using ISDN solution for satellite radio, and I wanted to go more mobile and do live events, you know, on satellite and AM FM radio. So through over time, and we're talking about 8 years, that we decided to try different things and develop an ecosystem, and we call it voice video optimized internet conferencing ecosystem. I wanted something that is simple, because normally when you're dealing with broadcasters or what they call talent, they're talented at talking on air, but to be honest with you, any broadcast engineer would understand they're not talented turning on the machine and remoting in or doing any of that. So we needed something simple, mobile, and an ecosystem. And we came up with this iPad contraption using an iPad interface called Menlo, where you can put in Ethernet, have an XLR, quarter inch plug, something simple. We didn't need to get anything complex. We needed to get from point A to point B, because in my mind, the only two things that you need really is power and internet. Well, we got that part figured out. but we needed a conduit, an easy barrier to entry to create content. And we created that ecosystem before the pandemic, and we're always refining it. But when the pandemic happened, Kirk and Chris, that we realized that the ecosystem could be modified in so many different ways that it didn't have to be just for live broadcasting, AM/FM radio, because we used to put the Lucy app on here. It worked reliably. There were no problems. It was so easy because everybody knows how to use an iPad, but not everybody knows how to use another codec when you're talking about talent or broadcasters in the field or CEOs now, because now I've gotten out of conventional media and have done a lot of live virtual events, both hybrid and fully virtual. And I deal with a lot of C-level executives that are very smart in their field, but guess what? They don't even know how to turn on even an iPad. So, you know, that's what we have to deal with. And we wanted some easy solution that very simple, but can do big things. And I don't know if I should do the big reveal, Kirk, before we go to break, but the iPad that Chris was secretly testing for me, he was using 2 years on Twerk on This Week in Radio Tech. And yeah, after he passed away, I'm actually using his right now, because I was able to get it back from his wonderful family. They were great in the process of trying to locate it, but it was always near him. And Chris would always report back, because I'm always looking for data. What's the problem, Chris? And he's always said, nothing. Everything works fine. I was like, does anybody know that you're using it? He's like, no one has said a word. I haven't said a word. And he was true to his word, because every person I talked to surrounding Chris Tobin knew nothing about it. Knew nothing about it, which is funny, which I'm actually doing this whole live podcast with you guys on right now.
We might need to have you back if we want to look into that more in depth whenever you're ready, because we're just about out of time. Yep. Sam Wu, I want to, because we won't be coming back to you on this episode, I want to thank you so much for your participation and telling us about what Chris Tobin had been working on with you. And yes, I knew he was using an iPad on some shows. I didn't know it was the super secret Menlo. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to hype it up too much, but the whole point of the project, where anybody can use it, can use it and can figure it out. And that's actually a lot harder than it seems.
Good deal. Sam, well, good to see you. Love to have you back again sometime. And maybe we can do a show together in person across the street from a Devils game.
Absolutely. Just let me know.
If we can overcome the noise in the bar.
I've actually figured that out.
Yeah. It's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 576. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. Chris Tarr and I will be right back in just a minute. Hang on.
Hey, what's happening? St. John here, coming to you from Command Central, and wanted to tell you about the absolute best partner you can have in radio. I'm talking about, boom, Wheatstone's Vox Pro. Lots of different audio software out there. Why Vox Pro? It's the only software designed to do what we needed to do, which is record, edit, playback in real time. When I say lightning fast, I'm going to show you how fast you can edit stuff up in Vox Pro right now. Literally three clicks on the controller. Mark left, mark right. Everything that gets marked, you hit delete, it goes away. It's literally that fast. So we're going to take this part right here. Boom. From caller 9 to him saying, I'm ready.
Five. Ready for that secret sound.
Boom. All of that stuff. Hit delete. It goes away. Here's your edit.
You are tackling secret sound, caller 9.
I'm ready, St. John.
So one of the best features of version 7, this is awesome, it's effects macros, and you can literally put a chain of effects together so that instead of having to normalize a phone bit and then use noise reduction on it and EQ it and all that, you can literally build a chain. One button, this one's called call right here, I just click that, all of those processes happen instantaneously. Final thing that I love about Vox Pro, and there's so much more to get into, but one of my favorite things, you can load it on a laptop. I've literally done my show from a hotel room in Armenia to the conference room at, this was fun, Jury Duty. Great thing, no one could tell the difference. Vox Pro makes it totally easy. Telling you, if you're looking for the best on-air partner, call my friends at Wheatstone, ask them about Vox Pro, and you will be glad you did.
This Week in Radio Tech brought to you in part by the Vox Pro from Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc, bgs.cc. Go to their website, bgs.cc. Call them at 352-622-7700. Good folks. Really, I mean, really good folks at Broadcasters General Store. Hey, Sam, thank you very much for being on the show. I know that you, you know, as we said earlier in the show, it's been just over a year since Chris Tobin's passing, and Chris was a big part of our show, half the show, really, for 11 years. And so we miss him very, very much. Sam, we have a tribute video that we're going to play here. If you had just a sentence or two to say about Chris Tobin, I'd welcome you to do that right now if you want to.
Absolute professional, and that's about it. He was an absolute professional and a kind man. He taught me everything I know, and yeah. And I'm very appreciative of his time and effort and his vision of what he and I wanted to do.
Yeah, good. Thank you. I feel the same way. Yeah. Chris Tarr, you worked with Chris Tobin, but mostly right here on This Week in Radio Tech. Did you have a thought or two about Chris Tobin?
The first thing, there are two things that come to mind when I think about him, and I do a lot, is a sense of humor. He was funny, but not in a goofy kind of way. He just had this really dry, fun sense of humor. And, you know, you would at first think that he was serious about something. You realize this is all just a big long con coming from him, and I would laugh. And then, you know, the other thing was just how kind he was. You know, I more often than not, and he and I actually only met in person once, and that was at NAB. But we talked all the time, either through Twitter or email or whatever. But he would just send me a message. Hey, how you doing? You know, everything okay? Just checking in, making sure things are good. And, you know, I have very few friends that do that. And he took the time to do that. So just a really kind, funny, smart guy. And I miss him deeply.
We're going to roll a little video that Suncast has put together about Chris Tobin. It's a video that we intended to show close to 11 months ago, but we just didn't get a chance to. And we're going to run it for you in just a moment here. But we also have an announcement about Chris Tarr. Chris, is this as good a time as any to make such an announcement?
Well, I suppose. I mean, you are the father. Oh, not yes. That one. Sorry. There's something else. Something else.
I should have had a quick comeback for that, and I just don't.
You missed me, didn't you? You missed me.
Yeah, we missed you. Well, you had for a number of years, you were not a co-host on the show. Even you started with us, and then you had to leave for a while because you got real busy. And now you're in charge of everything, and you get to set the hours, apparently. So
I do. Well, you know, the hardest part was it's 4 o'clock Central Time on a Thursday, mm-hmm. which meant I was mm-hmm. sitting in my office at work. Well, now I don't have an office. I have my home office, but you know, I'm the guy in charge. I'm the big man on campus. I am the big cheese. So my calendar is my calendar.
So what does this mean for This Week in Radio Tech? What's your participation going to be?
I'm back.
Okay. Does this mean that maybe every now and then I could have a week off and you could just host the show?
Now let's not get all, you know, let's all get ahead of ourselves right here. Yes, that would certainly mean that you could take a vacation. I don't know that I'd recommend leaving the show in my hands, but you could do it.
Well, I, in all seriousness, when Chris Tobin passed away, it was such an emotional blow to me. And, I felt like the best thing I could do was just to soldier on and host the show myself without any help for a while. And that while just kind of felt like a year was about the right amount of time. And Chris, I approached you a couple months ago and said, hey, would you consider coming back on the show and co-hosting on either a regular basis or a pretty regular basis? And you said?
Absolutely, I'm in. Absolutely.
Good. All right.
I mean, I can't, you know, obviously can't fill the shoes of Mr. Tobin, but I have a feeling that he would be very pleased with the arrangement.
Well, most of us could not fill the shoes of each other anyway. So,
And before we close out, because again, this is something that I know, I know Chris would get a kick out of, how things kind of come back around again. So I spent a lot of time at transmitter sites, you know, doing different things. And I'm always worried. I've got my, you know, $1,000 iPhone here. And I'm always worried that, and it's happened where I'm going to drop it and break it or whatever. So I decided to get a second phone for when I'm out at work. It is a flip phone.
Oh my God. It is
a honest to God Android flip phone that's made by, it's got Cat branded, and it's dust proof. It can take falls on the concrete at 6 feet up. So dust proof, waterproof. It's run a stripped down version of Android, but it's a flip phone. So now, you know, when I'm at work, that's the phone I use. So I can keep my iPhone in the car. But yeah, I can't believe that you could actually get flip phones. It's just, crazy.
I can't wait for you to text me back using T9 texting.
This actually has a touchscreen on it, but you know, maybe I'll do the T9 just to make you happy.
Hey, we need to run this video. Chris Tarr, look forward to seeing you again many, many weeks in the years ahead. All right. Now, without further ado, Suncast, let's fade to black and roll this tribute to Chris Tobin.